Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We begin today again at the intersection of Melnia Cass Boulevard and Massachusetts Avenue in Boston, where the administration of acting Boston Mayor Kim Janey has been actively working to clear the tents there. Today, at the nearby block of Southampton Street and Theodore Glenn Way, city workers cleared about a dozen tents. WBUR senior correspondent Deborah Becker was there, joins us now. Deb, are those dozen tents gone at this point?
They are. They're gone. It started about 8 o'clock this morning, took about 3 hours. Workers from the Boston Public Health Commission and some men who are clients at the Southampton Street shelter cleared up tents and debris and a lot of items lining the sidewalks on that particular intersection. There were pallets, tarps, shopping carts, even a sofa. And all of these items were pushed into and put in, loaded into a large Boston garbage truck where they were crushed.
So what's the city saying about why these particular tents went today? Was this just part of the overall executive order to clear the area?
No, they're saying that today's efforts were part of regular cleanups of the area, that this was a regular cleanup that had been scheduled for Monday but was put off because of the storm. They say these cleanups are being done for building maintenance. A statement from Acting Mayor Kim Janey's office says city outreach workers are offering those who are living in the tents to be removed options for shelter and services, and says no one is being asked to move without first being offered shelter. The Newmarket Business Association was also there today and said the cleanup was to move people so an area business could access the side of its building where the tents were to put up new lighting and security cameras.
Okay, so this wasn't part of the executive order, but they're sticking to the commitment in the executive order, they're saying, about you don't have to leave unless there's a place for you to go.
Correct.
Okay, so big storms. Going to talk later in the show about the impacts further south, Cape, South Shore. But what happened? I mean, the wind was huge. What happened with these tents at Mass and Cass?
Right. A lot of belongings were blown around. A lot of things were very wet, strewn about, wet clothing, wet blankets, a very wet tent. Some people said because of the storm, they either moved their tents or they moved to more secure tents that could withstand the rain and the wind from the storm.
So the folks being cleared away today, where are they going? Are they going into city-provided housing?
Some say they are, some say they're not. The city workers are offering shelter space to those living in the tents. Some told me that they were offered space at the Southampton Street shelter. Some were offered a room at Pine Street. One woman told me she connected with a city worker who told her she might be eligible for temporary housing, but she wasn't so sure.
So you've spoken with people there today. What did they tell you? How are they faring? How are they feeling?
Well, they're feeling very insecure. Many are feeling very displaced. Many people I spoke with said they did not want to go to shelters. Some of the Boston workers there today told me that they had solid commitments from three people who were there to go to shelter. But the folks who don't want to go, they cite a variety of reasons. Some say a shelter is only a one-night placement. What do they do after that? They can't bring their belongings that they've been living with in these tents. They can't go with a partner. If they're actively using drugs, they're worried about withdrawal. Some say the shelters are not safe. I spoke with one gentleman, Ron Geddes. He's been homeless for years, and he's been living in the Mass and Cass area for the past few months. He said that his tent was removed, even though he declined shelter, and told the workers that he would not go to Pine Street. And he feels that this effort today is just removing people from the area and not offering realistic options. Let's listen.
I understand this can't stay like that. I don't want to be here. This can't happen. They're going to be there tomorrow, there the next day. I agree with that. I'm not asking for anything more than affordable housing. That's it. A place. They're telling me I have on my list is 5 to 10 year waiting list. That's unreasonable, unfair, and I can't, it's not going to change anything for me.
You could probably hear in the background there all of the debris being loaded into the garbage truck. Geddes also said that even though his tent was removed today, he has another one, and he's just going to park it a few blocks away.
So we've been talking to you and you've been following this for a while. Two other stories you covered this week that I want to check in on with you just a little bit. First, talk to us about Suffolk County Jail, the plan from Suffolk County Sheriff Steve Tompkins.
Well, the sheriff has suggested having a court session in his jail and putting a treatment center at a building on the jail campus. And he says the people living in the nearby tents, because his jail is right near where the tent encampment is, who have outstanding warrants would be brought to the court session, and a judge, probation officer would oversee these sessions remotely, and the judge, probation officer, and attorneys would decide whether that person would go to treatment. And that court is expected to be operating as of Monday.
So then yesterday you covered an event hosted by some doctors and political leaders opposing Tompkins' plan. What's the thrust of their opposition?
Well, they say they're opposed to the idea of using a carceral system to deal with homelessness, mental health, and addiction, which are really the roots of the problem here at Mass and Cass. They say the city should not just be removing tents and telling people to go to a shelter for a night. And they argue that instead of using resources to put people into correctional settings, the city and the state could spend that money on behavioral health facilities or medical facilities and more housing. But the sheriff says he has the space and he can start getting people off the streets before winter.
Okay, so at the end of the day, city wants the tents gone. There's an executive order now, but there will also be a new mayor basically by the middle of the month next month. So how do you expect to see this situation play out?
Well, you know, it's hard to know, but I think Sheriff Tompkins' plan will go forward, possibly next week. I think there has been a lot of momentum behind it and a lot of support. The State Public Defender Agency has said it is opposed to the sheriff's plan, and it will be advocating that people not be incarcerated. And of course, the public defenders will be representing the people who are brought into the sheriff's court. Also, the mayor will continue these so-called cleanups, basically removing tents and telling people to go to shelters. And so I think people may go for a night or two. They may store their belongings temporarily, but until there is something more permanent, some kind of housing provided, I really don't see the tents going away. There might be fewer, but the people here say they formed a community. There are services here. And I don't think that they're just going to up and leave right away.
All right. WBUR senior correspondent Deborah Becker there. Deb, thanks as always.
You're welcome.
If there's anything we've learned from the pandemic, it's that the way people work is changing. For many, it's more digital, more remote. Others have walked away from their jobs entirely, seeking fulfillment in their lives in other ways. For others, still, it's missing a few things like a headquarters or even a boss. WBUR's Yasmin Ammer introduces us to a new, more decentralized way of working.
Last December was a stressful time for Nicole Davies, a mom of two young children who lives in Roslindale. She got laid off from her job in academia, where she was running a music entrepreneurship program.
And as anybody who's been laid off, you know, has gone through, it was definitely like a rocky and emotional time.
She wanted to keep working in music, but finding another job, the right job, was tough.
My resume was definitely not getting through any of the algorithms at like bigger music product companies. I was interested in...
Davies did some consulting and freelance work. She helped her two kids with remote learning, and she joined some online communities, ones that shared her passion for music and tech. One of them started as a text group on the messaging app Telegram, and when some of its members decided to host a conference, Davies jumped in to help organize.
So I was like, yeah, I can do that. I need something to like occupy my brain space other than trying to keep my kids on their Zoom and arguing and printing out a million worksheets.
The conference went well, and she kept working with a group called Seed Club. She became a full-time employee in July.
And I guess the joke that I made is that I just like sort of never left the party. Like I came and then started sort of just pitching in on events and stuff like that.
Seed Club is a new type of organization called a DAO. That stands for Decentralized Autonomous Organization. The word decentralized means the structure is flat. No headquarters, typically no hierarchies or bureaucracies, and no W-2s. So Davies is still figuring out how to do her taxes. But here's her very simple description of a DAO.
DAOs are often or can be thought of as like a Reddit or a Discord or a group text with a bank account.
Basically, Davies and other members decide how to run their DAO. They vote on all of the company's decisions, like who to hire, what projects to work on, or how to resolve disputes. And they get paid for their work from the group's digital wallet.
At the core of it, it's just a group of people that really care about something, and they want to work on it together.
Anne Connolly teaches blockchain and social impact at Boston University. She says new technologies are making a new business model possible. The first DAO started in 2016, and they've been getting more popular in tech-savvy circles. It's estimated that about 1.3 million people are DAO members, and Connolly says that number will keep growing.
So DAOs really are the future of work. This notion that you're going to show up to one geographic location every day to work for one company in one regulatory jurisdiction is just that in itself is already an outdated notion, even just in the digital world.
A lot of the biggest DAOs out there work in finance and cryptocurrency, and some are social clubs, spaces for people to hang out and meet each other. Others, like the one Davies works in, are trying to build something new. She works with creators to promote their work using blockchain technology, so they're less dependent on platforms like Spotify or Facebook.
We work with podcasters, we work with, we're working with film companies, a ton of musicians, journalists, researchers.
Just like in a traditional job, Davies gets paid every month. But here's what is different. She gets paid in two types of cryptocurrency. One can be directly converted to dollars. That's what she uses to pay her mortgage. The other is a digital token specific to her DAO, kind of like having shares in a company. The more work she puts in, the more tokens she gets, and the more she has a stake in the DAO. And this goes back to a core belief she has about work.
When you are working to create value, are the people that are doing the hard work in an organization benefiting from that work and having a long-term stake in the thing that they're building?
Because DAOs are so new, there's still a lot to figure out, like benefits, HR, but mostly how to run a workplace when everyone gets a vote. Emin Gunsur is a computer scientist based in New York. He says DAOs add some transparency to organizations, but the majority decision isn't always the right one.
We know from many different failed democracies around the world that just because you've opened something up to potential vote by people doesn't mean you're going to get good outcomes. So we have to be a little bit careful about what it is that we are wishing for.
Davies admits that transitioning into an unfamiliar way to work did make her nervous at first. Remember, she's a mom with a mortgage. But ultimately, she decided it was worth it.
I'm happy with the risk that I took, and it's, I think, feeling less and less risky. It was also just really hard to think about going back to something where you're part of this like bigger institution and you're executing on somebody else's vision and you're just kind of a cog in that machine.
Sure, there'll be growing pains, she says. But at a time when so much of our work is already changing, why not try something different?
That report from WBUR's Yasmeen Ammer.